So power tour is a little bit of a different experience when you can't have your coffee. Like, it's not like part of like the calm morning. It's a little bit different. All right. So Ravobi, at the we've been learning the second volume of Ali Shore, and that nice thick volume. And so in the third shah, in the third section, Ravobi talks about all the Moedim. And so at the very, very end of his collection on the Moedim, because the holidays really start with Pesach, continue through Purim. And so this is his very last piece. You see, it's the 25th parak, 25th chapter. And this is sort of how he wraps up a lot of the holiday discussion. And so we're going to have a chance to learn it today. And you know, in general, when we think about Jewish holidays, miracles come to mind. You know, all the stories seem to incorporate miracles and these wonderful, elaborate stories in some way, shape, or form, except, seemingly, Purim. And so Ravobi said, he points out that there are a few different kinds of miracles, of two different kinds of nisim that take place. We've got a few more. And so at the very beginning, top line we say, yesh nisim shonim. There are different kinds of miracles that exist. Yesh u mitavken hativim kimo hayam basha v'kriyas yamsuf. First kind of miracle are like the full-fledged, all-out. This is we're changing nature. You know, the sun was traveling along its normal trajectory. It's going to be, you know, in the sky for approximately 12 hours. But no, it's going to stop. It's going to be in the sky for 18 hours, the way it stopped when Yeshua was battling. And Kriyas Yamsuf that we read about, that we're going to be talking about come Pesach, where seas don't ordinarily split. And all of a sudden they did. And not just this sea, but all the seas. So actually, if you read the Pesukim, it's not so clear that this was like a tremendous miracle. It seemed like over the course of the evening, like the wind came along and just caused like a cool tidal wave. But for sure, based on Midrashim and everything that we know about Kriyas Yamsuf, this was a tremendous, this was a massive, massive miracle where God totally changed nature. And that's sort of the one level where God's saying, like, hi, I'm here, I'm running the world, it's very clear that I'm in charge and no one else is. Part of the idea behind the Esther Makos in Egypt was that God was showing that God runs the world and that power doesn't run the world, that the sun's not in charge, that the Nile's not in charge, none of these are worthwhile gods. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Melech Malchei Melechim, is really running the show. And so you've got sort of that, like, you know, top flight, really impressive miracle. But the thing about miracles, and this really is miracles in general, but these in particular, that a miracle, this is from Rabbi Ari Kahn, is kind of like a joke. It's all about timing. Because when you're telling a joke, it's very, very important that your line comes before people laugh. If people laugh and then you use your line, that's not a joke. That's just an added comment. If a tree falls in a forest and no one's around to hear it, doesn't make a sound, if a miracle happens on a Tuesday morning, does anyone know, does anyone care? If the sea were to split, would anyone know? Would anyone care? So yeah, Kadosh Baruch Hu is changing nature, but what value is that? Yeah. I don't know if it's dating me or not dating me, but there was a movie a while back called Bruce Almighty, where Jim Carrey was given godly powers by, I think, the only person who's not heretical to play God in a movie, which is Morgan Freeman. I think when Morgan Freeman gets the Shemaim, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to be like, if it had to be someone, I'm glad it was you. And so Bruce, who's now almighty, he realizes he has powers, and so he's sitting in a diner, and he's got a bowl of soup in front of him, and he, like, splits the soup. And it's a very powerful moment. There's, like, music playing, there's wind, but he splits soup. Who cares? It doesn't make a difference. The significance of a miracle is not just that something extraordinary happened, something fantastic, something that's out of the ordinary, but the timing of it and the significance. And so a miracle has to be the right time. So Kriyas Yamsuf was extraordinary and miraculous, but also very, very appropriately timed. Am Yisrael really needed the sea to split at that moment. And so that's sort of level one. We have these miracles, and we talk about a nace. A nace is a miracle, but also if in Tekav Shor HaGadol HaRaseinu, the sa nace lekavetz gul yaseinu, and we should, that you know, during our davening, we're asking that all of the other nations should come in, come back to Eretz Yisrael, and we're saying it should be a nace. It should be not a miracle, it should be a sign, a flag, an indication to the whole world that Am Yisrael is supposed to be in Eretz Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world. And when we talk about Nisim, we talk about miracles, to some extent it's showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world. So that's Nisim overall, and the most obvious, the most clear indication of that is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu mamash changes nature, such as with Kriyas Yamsuf. That's level one. Now we get to level two. We'll have two more levels. Level two is v'yesh neis in the second line. Galoy shehateva nishar al makomo. That nature doesn't change per se. Kamo makom ha'aron ha'akruvim shlo shlohikumida. Oh zeh shal Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa shamar mish amar l'shemen aviyadluk yomar l'chomet aviyadluk shalchomet lo neh pakal shemen v'kol zeh hudalak. So we're gonna do the second one and then we'll do the first one. The second one start in the Masechta Tainit where Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was this tremendous tzaddik. He had miracles happening for him all the time. There's one story where there was a rodent of some kind who was biting people and killing them, and he's like, I'll take care of this. He takes off his shoe, puts his heel up like the hole where the rodent would hang out, and the rodent bit Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, and the rodent died instead of him dying. And so Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa is in his house Erev Shabbos, and his daughter, his wife, it says, honey, we don't have any oil for Shabbos. And so he says, don't worry about it. The same Akharish Baruch who says that oil should light, will say that vinegar should light. And apparently they had vinegar in the house. And so she lit the vinegar, and obviously it didn't just last for a few hours, it lasted all of Shabbos. And so, is that a miracle? For sure. But nature hasn't changed. The vinegar didn't stop being vinegar, it just all of a sudden it was able to be a conduit for flames. That's one example he gives. The other example is that the Aron, which is sort of the parashas we've been learning, was lo min hamida, meaning it wasn't measurable. The Aron was 2.5 feet, and the Bazim, the poles, were eight amot. The entirety of the Kodesh Kedoshim was 10 amot. So if we do the math, if there's 10 amot, there should be one amot on either side, and otherwise you should not be able to navigate very much inside of the Kodesh Kedoshim. And yet, when the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh Kedoshim, no matter where he stood, he was always equidistant from the Aron, and he was always 5 amot from it, even though it doesn't make any sense. It's totally illogical. It's almost like an optical illusion or like some hologram where it doesn't matter where he's standing in the room, he was always going to be the same distance from the Aron, even though it's impossible. It's not that the distance of the room changed. It's not that the Aron disappeared, but it's clearly some miraculous thing within the confines of nature. And so we've got sort of two levels of miracles that are taking place. One that's obviously changing things up, and one that's not quite changing things, but is clearly abnormal and special. Okay? Now Rav Vova is going to explain to us that there's one more level that's, quite honestly, a little bit, in my words, not his, like a little bit boring. He says, V'yesh, this is in line 5. There are miracles that happen entirely within nature. It's not contradicting nature in any way, shape, or form. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu is this, you know, this craftsman who's entirely hidden. Kodesh Baruch Hu is not clearly doing anything right now, and yet it's still obviously a miracle. The one that I think everyone can appreciate and relate to is the fact that a couple together, and then like a little tiny seed over the course of 9 months turns into a human being, and then over the course of 5, 10, 15, 20 years, that like tiny little speck that existed, there are millions of sperm that are in every time a couple is together, and yet that tiny little speck turns into a full-fledged human being that takes up lots of space, that can do all these things. The fact that exists is nothing short of miraculous, but that's part of the Teva. It's part of nature. We know that, we sort of expect it. It doesn't make it less miraculous. It doesn't mean that Akash Baruch Hu is less so in the world, but it's not as obvious. The other piece that I only know from what I've heard from Rabbi Akiva Tatz, Rabbi Dr. Akiva Tatz is a tremendous Talmid Chacham, but also a physician. And so he says that he's delivered babies before, and when a baby's born, I don't know if anyone is familiar with this. I have not been in that situation, so I couldn't tell you. But when a baby's delivered, everybody says that the baby effectively dies in the doctor's hands, because when in the womb there are lots of orifices that are open that are not supposed to be open when not in the womb, and lots of things that are closed that need to open up. And so for a moment the baby will die. The heart will slow, and as the doctor you can almost feel the baby. It feels like a stillborn for a moment, and which is why like the greatest simcha is when the baby cries, because once the baby cries, it's an indication the baby's there, it's alive, all the things that needed to open and close happen, like the lungs opened up, they're closed up, whatever the details are, and so that's an open miracle, that's obvious a miracle. But It's not changing Teva. That's nature. That's the way it works. But built into nature is that miracle. And so he says, when we're thinking about miracles, where does Purim story fall in? Quite obviously, in our third category. And so he says, Kazeh Hayanetz Purim. And the Maharal explains. The Maharal has this whole sefer called Or HaKadosh, and in it he gets into all the details and really develops a beautiful picture of the nes that was nes Purim, that is nes Purim. And he says, Umuvar HaMaharal, ki nes zeh haya kol kach tzanua mipnei shehu ba mimakum gavo anod. It comes from a very high place, and when it comes from a very high place, it has to be very tzanua. It has to be modest, hidden. I don't know, how do we translate tzanua?
Modest.
Okay, fair enough. We're on line 8, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
And so he says, truth be told, mi yodea, eza nes haya yoter gadol. Which nes was bigger? Kriyas Yamsuf, o ha nahapo hu shel nes Purim. Kriyas Yamsuf, where everything changed, where nature changed, or the unexpected result of this very naturally occurring story that is Purim. He says, Ella kol nes kipi matzav ador v'tzarcho. Every miracle that happens happens consistent with the generation that needs it. So Yisrael Mitzrayim needed this sort of big revelation where Kadosh Baruch Hu is almost literally popping his head out of the clouds and waving and saying, hi, I'm running the show. And Purim, it wasn't about a Kadosh Baruch Hu running the show. It was about, and showing the world that, it was about Kadosh Baruch Hu had to make things happen so that Am Yisrael could be safe, Am Yisrael could be successful. And so he says that specifically in this generation where Am Yisrael was already in Galus, they were already sort of in a time period where Kadosh Baruch Hu wasn't openly revealed. Because what happened when Kadosh Baruch Hu was openly revealed, when they had a Beis HaMikdash, what happened? It was destroyed because they weren't doing a good job. And so they were clearly not going to get like the wow factor of a Yetzias Mitzrayim kind of Geula. They needed a different kind of Geula. And so Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'll give you a different kind. We're not going to hit Category 1 miracles. We're not even going to do Category 2. This is going to seem all natural. And so within that context, HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrates the Megillah, and we know, when we finish reading the Megillah, it's so obvious. You finish reading, and it's like, well, clearly God was pulling the strings there. But there's, at no point in time, we know this, but at no point in time does it say Shem Hashem. At no point in time does anyone even really talk about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to save us. Mordechai is talking to Esther, and telling Esther, you really should talk to Achashverosh. And he says, if you don't, then if you stay quiet now, seemingly Mordechai is about to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will still save us, but he doesn't. He says, Rerach v'hatzal yamod la Yehudim. Am Yisrael will still be saved. But almost he's not even willing to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to save us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so hidden within this Megillah. Right? Kabbalistically say that it's the Megillat Esther. Megaleh means to reveal, and Esther from the language of Hester, which we're going to see in a second, means hidden. That the whole idea about in and around Purim and around the Megillah is to reveal that which is hidden. That there's something that's not on the surface, that's not clear to everyone, and that we need to try and see that, and we need to try and reveal it. And so what Revolva is going to help us try and appreciate and understand is why it's necessary for so much of this Megillah to be in private, to be hidden, and how Tznius and Hester are intricately connected, and how that's actually very helpful to us in our Avodas Hashem. And so we're going to jump to the second paragraph, and he says, HaMaharal, in the Or HaKadosh, Amigilas Esther Megalalan, which is an interesting turn of phrase, Gamkein, Ketzad, Zelch, and Mordechai of Esther, Nes Gavoa, Zu, Shel Purim. How did Mordechai and Esther merit to be part of this miracle? He says, Hamida Haruya Lenes, Zehu Raksnias. The only way to really be Zocha in this miracle was to be Tzanua. And so let's appreciate, what does Tzanua mean? Oftentimes when we hear the term Tzanias, we think of girls getting in trouble that their skirts are too short. Tzanias is a much larger terminology. Rav Herschel Schachter, Rabbi Myers gave a shiur about this this past week on Friday, and so we've been talking about it for like a week and a half. Rav Herschel Schachter talks about that Tzanias is a midah of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. A Kadosh Baruch Hu is the most Tzanua of all creations, because Tzanua just means that you're not revealing everything that you are, everything that you have. So there's a physical manifestation of that, that if a person's not wearing a lot of clothes and they're physically revealing themselves, and there's a part of them that could be hidden that's not, But if someone could be covered head to toe and still not be very tsanua, and you could even have I think this was Moshe Sternbach, but I could be wrong, but it was some rabbi in South Africa, and his community was, the people were not so Shomer Shabbos, and they weren't so Shomer Kashrus, and they were part of the community, but they didn't look like the same kind of Orthodox Jews that you'll find in parts of the United States. And he ended up becoming a rabbi in the United States, maybe in Israel, and he was yelling at his congregants once. He says, my South African women who didn't cover their hair and didn't necessarily wear skirts and didn't necessarily wear the sleeve blunts that you guys are all wearing, he says, but they were so much more tsanua that they were not open and they were not showing themselves off to the whole world. You could be dressed in a certain way and still be trying to show off. You don't have to literally be standing on a chair to be, if all the attention in the room falls on you every time you walk in, there's a little bit something there. There's a lack of sneeze. Maybe it's appropriate. Maybe it's necessary. And Herschel Schechter, who's the Rosh Yeshiva of YU, he's everywhere he goes, people stand up for him. He's never basically alone. No one ever just kind of like shrugs him off because he's one of the biggest rabbis in the United States. And so he says that really, ideally, he would just be a private person and he would not be up in front. He would never give shirim. He would never be in the front of the room, have all the focus on him. But someone has to teach Torah. Someone has to lead Am Yisrael. And so he is pogim. He's lacking in his own experience of tznius so that he can lead Bnei Yisrael. And so not everyone needs to do that. Not everyone has the requirement or the obligation to lead Am Yisrael the way that Rav Schechter does. So each of us to our level will be tzanua. And so it might mean someone has to put it aside in order to to get up in front of the shul and explain that we're doing a chesed campaign, or you need to honor somebody at dinner or something. But how frequently do people say no to being honored at dinner? So part of it is that it's a whole hassle, it's annoying, there's like videos and it's like a little bit embarrassing. But part of it is also that we innately have a piece of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in us. We don't want to be out in front. We don't want the whole world to see who we are. We want to be able to say there's part of me that people don't know about, just I know about. And that's why maybe this is obvious to everyone, but if you think about it, the halakhos of tznius that don't necessarily apply to husband and wife, that husbands and wives don't have the same restrictions. Why is that? Because tznius doesn't mean that you should hold in who you are and no one should ever see it, but that only when there's a special, close relationship can someone appreciate that. Only when there is something special between us can you fully understand and appreciate what I have. And so there's a physical element to that. There's certain dress codes that don't exist between a husband and a wife, but there's also an emotional and a spiritual. It'd be very, very awkward if someone were to get up, like a bar mitzvah or like a Ofer of Shabbos Kala or Sheva Brachos. And, yesterday Josh and Shoshi Ross had a bris for a preemie baby. It was very exciting. It was at 5:30 in the afternoon on a Sunday, so it was fun having pizza at a bris instead of just bagels. And so he gets up, and he had like one line about how wonderful his wife is, how good of a mother she is, and he said, you're a wonderful mother and an adequate wife. Very adequate. It's okay. But if he got up and spent 7 minutes talking about how incredible she is, how much he loves her, it would be very awkward for everyone. And not just awkward because like we don't need to hear about it, but then we feel like what's going on in a person's relationship that they want the whole world to know about their relationship. There's something nice and special about it being private. I had this issue with more than one of the advisors that worked for me when I worked for NCSY, that when you're trying to develop a relationship with a student, with a teen, the easiest and best way to do it is through exclusion. You and I were going to go over to the corner, we're going to hang out, just us, and no one else is allowed to come, and it feels very special. There's like an exclusivity here. That's a word. But it's not healthy. For sure in NCSY context, we highly discourage it. Everything has to be out, open, and public. But also because then, to some extent, that relationship gets way more intense than it's supposed to be. To have an exclusive relationship, there are, thank God, not so much in Yiddish, but there are people who have relationships, but they're not exclusive relationships. Their boyfriend and girlfriend, or whatever the terminology is. But like they also like hang out with other people, and like it's not, it's not so committed. Those relationships don't mean very much. And then like it's another madriga, it's another level if it's an exclusive relationship. When there's something exclusive, then you can really get close, and then you really feel it. And so if there's a piece of me that I'm not sharing with the whole world, that only some people see, only a few people that I'm very close with, then that's very special. HaKadosh Baruch Hu so too in this world is a tanua. He also is not revealing himself to everyone. It happens a few times throughout history. You know, we had Kriyas Yamsuf, but the majority of the world is not seeing a Kriyas Baruch on a regular basis. And the majority of people are not seeing a husband or a wife in their full revelation. That would be inappropriate, and because we reflect a Kriyas Baruch Hu. But who does? A spouse knows the full extent of a person. A spouse, whether they're in private or in public, can fully appreciate who the other one. Even if for everyone else there's a tznius happening, even if for everyone else they're not showing off, they're not showing everything that they have, for the spouse they know. And so in our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, I don't want everyone to know how much I love a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You know, I sometimes go to like one of these very singy, very excited Kabbalah Shabbos, which are beautiful. But when someone is like going nuts on a Kabbalah Shabbos, in addition to like it like being a little bit challenging for some of the people next to them, but on like a deeper level, if they're like so overwhelmed with their love of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's beautiful. But there's also something to be said about someone who is so madly obsessed in love engaged with their Avodas Hashem, but only they know it. Rav Moshe Weinberger, who we talked about numerous times, if we're going to talk about someone who is madly in love with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, I think that he would probably qualify. And many, many of his Talmidim are these guys who are jumping up and down and going crazy during Kabbalah Shabbos. When Rav Moshe Weinberger davens, he stands perfectly still. You can't see a thing. There's not even like an intense chuckle going on. He just stands still. Now, part of that is potentially like a mode of tefillah that you want to stand in awe of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But part of it is that Rav Weinberger, for the most part, his Avodas Hashem is internal. It doesn't need to be expressed externally, and that's what makes it so special. And so, with this appreciation of tznius, Rav Obi is trying to tell us that Kodesh Baruch Hu deliberately, in the Nes of Purim, Purim wanted to be tanua, wanted to be hidden, private, wanted to be Hester. We're not going to read inside, but the Gemara says Esther min haTorah minayin. Where do we see Esther in the Torah? Which is already a funny question because she didn't exist during Matan Torah and she was in the canon of Tanakh. But where do we find Esther in the Torah in Chamisha Chumshei Torah? We say in at the end of the Torah, Kodesh Baruch Hu is saying when things aren't going well, Anochi Astir Hastir Astir Eskanai. I'm going to hide my face. This language of hiddenness. And we even said that Esther, what was Esther's real name? Hadassah. It wasn't actually Esther. Even her name is hidden. Everything about Esther in the story is hidden. She doesn't tell Akashverosh who she is, where she's from. We know so very little about Esther, really. And her whole essence is being hidden because in order to bring a Kodesh Baruch Hu to light in a way that's going to be hidden, in a way that we can appreciate it without these impressive, vast, nature-changing miracles, she also needed to be hidden. Mordecai needed to be hidden. And similarly, the Gemara says that where does Mordecai come from? From Mordor, where is it? In line 20 or so. Line 18. 17. In the middle of the line. It says, Mordecai mina Torah minayin. Where does Mordecai come from? Dixiv Mordor. That we've got one of the spices in the Ketores was Mordor. It was mirrors. I don't know. One of the spices things. Sometimes I don't worry that much about these translations because I just don't know. And so Mordor, and we talk about the Targum, the Aramaic form of Mordor is Maradachia, which sounds like Mordecai. But what's the significance of that? Rav Volbi explains, Hainu Ketores, that Mordecai is hinted to in the Torah through the Ketores, by the way, our Parsha this week, Parsha Kitisa, Shehayu Maktirim B'Yom HaKippurim Lifnayu Lifnin. When was the Ketores brought? On Yom Kippur, not only every day, but it was brought on the inside. On Yom Kippur, all the way inside in the Kodesh Kodashim, and even not on Yom Kippur, it was brought inside the Heichal. It wasn't brought on the Mizbeach outside. Only Kohanim ever saw it. The Ketores in and of itself is a private service that only ever happens on the inside, only with people who are close. And so we're now going to jump to the next page. We're jumping to the next page. Rav Volbi, I think we sufficiently developed that the Purim story happens through Hester. And so on line 5, in the second paragraph, he says, V'atznei alechadim elokeinu. And you're supposed to walk with Sina, with Tznius, in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And when does that happen? With Hotzos, Amesah, Kanasas, Kala, L'chuppah. Now those are two things that usually happen with pomp and circumstance. You know, when there's a royal wedding, that's like a whole week. When there's a big funeral, it happens a lot. When funerals happen, we tell everyone so people can come. When weddings happen, they're huge. It says, but that's when you need to have tzina. When things are open and revealed, that's specifically when you want to try and make sure that there's something that's not being revealed, that you don't want to leave it all out on the table. As the Medrash Tanchuma talks about the luchos that are also going to be broken this week. Sorry if I spoiled the parsha for anyone. But the luchos we're showing us are given with all this pomp and circumstance. There's lights and sounds. And it's all very exciting. And when it's all very exciting, that's great. But it also means that the essence of the luchos are somewhat subject to the externality of it. And they're subject to the relationship that people have on an external level. And so when visually, when externally, superficially, Am Yisrael is no longer committed to the luchos because they're worshiping the golden calf, they have to go. Even though there might have been an internal desire toward a Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's a whole more elaborate Torah, but maybe the Chayta Egel was really an attempt for Am Yisrael to connect to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But if the luchos were presented without tznius, with a very low level of tznius, then the low level of tznius, that the open, superficial commitment to the Egel and not to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the luchos had to be destroyed. But the second luchos, how are they given? With a Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai, amid the clouds, no one else saw it. Moshe brought them down later on, but no one was there. They were given almost entirely b'tzina. And so even when Am Yisrael messed up, even though when externally it didn't seem like Am Yisrael were willing to connect to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, if internally, if deep down they had that desire, then b'tznius, they were still connected, and the luchos could still survive, they could still last. Is that clear? So jumping to the next paragraph, again, line 12, he says, "Ein lecha mitzvah pirsum yosher gedola midin pirsum anisa." And so when we talk about tznius, the exact opposite of tznius is pirsum anis, to publicize. But let's think about how you publicize this miracle of Megillah, ruin the punchline. You read the Megillah, but as we said, if you read the Megillah, imagine you want to tell everyone about a great Kodesh Baruch Hu. He runs the show. So you say, God's awesome. Let me tell you. And you go through the 10 chapters of the Megillah. And at no point in time does HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name come up. And at no point in time are there any open miracles. And so the person, after you tell them the whole story, is going to be like, huh? I thought you were talking about that God saved the day. No, God didn't save the day. There's like a lot of things that happen. Like, there are circumstances. Haman messed up a few times. And Mordecai and Esther were really sly and cunning. And they figured it out. Esther really is the hero here. And there's no HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What do you mean this is a revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Specifically, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not is Bitsin and Hester in the Megillah, that's how we reveal it. That's how we express this miracle that took place. Because just like when you have a couple that's close, and so even though the whole world might not appreciate a line or two or a smile or a wink between a husband and wife, they might not appreciate the depth of that, but the other one does. Their spouse does. There are like certain phrases and terms that like a husband and wife can appreciate, like inside jokes almost. But the whole world doesn't know it. The whole world doesn't appreciate. But the spouses do. That couple does. And it's almost like we have this close personal relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That there's this whole Megillah, which is almost like a joke, because in Shakespeare's plays there were like three kinds of plays. There was history, so forget that. Those are boring. Then there's comedy and tragedy. And basically, the difference between comedy and tragedy are, if you get into the details, how does it end? Does it end sadly, or does it end happily? But any time you got into a comedy, you never expected it to happen. You always expected that things would end poorly, like all the other shows. But what do you know? All of a sudden, it ended happily. This ended up going well, and that also made it a Shakespearean comedy. And the Megillah, you didn't really expect it to go well. It seemed like, by the natural course of things, it shouldn't have gone well. But we appreciate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one pulling the strings. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the puppet master. But only if you have that close relationship, only if you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your life on a constant basis, can you see, obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing it here. Instead of just being told, it was politics, it was convenience, it was coincidence. And so the fact that the Megillah is specifically our form of telling the whole world about what happened, it's still done secretly. It's still done in a way that's very tzanua, that only if you have that close relationship can you really appreciate. I'll just tell you one other thing that I think is interesting, and then I will have to wrap up because I think we're already, that it's not just that Mordechai and Esther were tanua, but really all of Am Yisrael were tanua. So we're familiar that Esther didn't tell Achashverosh who she was. If Esther grew up in Shushan, the capital of Achashverosh's land, and Achashverosh is not like an easygoing guy. If he wants something, he makes it happen. So you can imagine, Rabbi Ethan Feiner talks about this, you can imagine, if Achashverosh wants to know who Esther is, he's putting up flyers, he's sending out a royal proclamation, someone tell me who this girl is. Does anyone know Esther? Does anybody know her? Does anyone know where she's from? I want to know. I'm so curious. She won't tell me. Someone tell me. It wouldn't surprise me if during the State of the Union, he like stopped and he's like, does anyone know Esther? And I'm like, trying to get something. And even though Achashverosh is probably offering a reward, I'll give you $10,000. I'll give you $100,000 if you tell me where my wife is from, because I'm just so curious. None of Am Yisrael can say a word. So many of the people, they must have known Esther. She was a part of the community. Maybe she was married to Mordechai. Maybe she was his niece slash daughter. But she's like related to the Gadol Ador. And like the Jewish community in Shushan couldn't have been so huge. People must have known her. And there's a reward, and there's kavod, and the king really wants you to. You could, you know, be in good grace with the king if you just give over Esther. And yet all of Am Yisrael were like, no, Esther doesn't want to tell him. We're not going to be the ones to do it. We're not going to do that. And so when Am Yisrael can appreciate that there's a value to being tanua, a value to letting things be internal, then they can also be zocha to the miracle of Purim. Then they can also appreciate Kadosh Baruch Hu even when Kadosh Baruch Hu is not revealed. And the avodah of Purim really is for us to not only see a Kadosh Baruch Hu when a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not obviously there, but for us to reflect that as well, to make sure that, to do our very best, that what we have internally, who we are, is expressed a little bit, but not expressed entirely. And in that way, Mitzvah Hashem will be zocha to the next geula, that seemingly is going to come betzina and behester. So Yasher Koach coming out on the fast day, and we went a couple minutes over, I apologize. And Mitzvah Hashem, I think Rabbi Brand will be back next week.